Hello everyone and welcome to Orbital, the Gadgets 360 podcast. In today's episode, we are going to be speaking about the nuances of the Chinese app ban that has been done in India. Now, I will get into the details a bit because it's a little bit of a complicated issue. I actually want to introduce our guest first to build some credibility, because normally, as you guys know, we mostly talk about smartphones and generally what's happening in tech, but this is maybe a tech issue, maybe a legal issue, and maybe a jingoistic, you know, whole nationalism issue. So to talk about all of these things with a particular degree of sensitivity that I wanted on this podcast, I've got a special guest today, and that is Mishi Chaudhary, who's a tech lawyer based in New York City, and she's also done a lot of work in India as well. So Mishi, I think you are the best person to introduce yourself, so why don't you just do that?
Sure. Thank you, Pranay, for having me here. As you correctly pronounced, my name is Mishi Chaudhary. I am a lawyer. And 10 years ago, I found a legal services organization called SFLC.in, the Software Freedom Law Center India. And like everything else, which first has a really long name and then is forced by legal matters to shorten it, like ICICI or something else. We are also now in India, SFLC.in. I am the founder. Of course, the organization is much bigger than I am and has a much larger, bigger team. They work on issues like internet shutdowns in India. They were a big part of the Shreya Singhal judgment, which brought free speech and expression online. The Aadhaar cases, the right to privacy cases. They work on surveillance, they work on network neutrality, and various such things. Me, in my personal capacity, have been involved in all these issues, primarily in the United States and India, but also globally. So we do everything which will defend our digital freedom, and so that people can concentrate on using technology without worrying about what it does to their rights.
Yeah, so I don't think I could have found a more appropriate person for this one, or a more qualified person to talk about this particular topic. Now, the reason that, you know, we did not speak about this earlier is because if you don't have the legal expertise, if you don't know much about that aspect of it, it doesn't make sense to get into that debate about whether these apps should have been banned or not and what is going on there. So that's why it was actually important to have someone like you here to give the correct perspective on these matters, because we are tech experts, but we are not really very familiar with the legal framework around it. So I think we can maybe get this one, you know, kick-started by talking about what has happened for a bit, and then we can get your perspective on that. So the news was about a month ago, 59 Chinese apps were banned in India, and these had some really big names. Obviously, TikTok is one, which is also under scrutiny in the US now. But apart from that, we had some useful apps such as Cam Scanner that half the people didn't even know were, you know, like from a Chinese company or originated in China. And apart from that, we got a bunch of other apps such as Mi Community, DU Privacy, and whatnot. So there were plenty of big names over there. And when that ban was announced, it was, let's just say, a little, I guess, sudden, because, you know, the government just issued one order and said something about national security or some, you know, very scary sounding thing like that, and said that, you know, these apps are now banned. So I actually don't have much of an idea about the legal aspect of it. Is this something that legally is fine, or is it something that the government enforced via some special orders that are that it passed recently or something like that?
So the interesting thing about India is that although we only have one major legislation called the Information Technology Act, and which was amended extensively in 2008 after the Mumbai attacks, but despite having just been one legislation, it seems to give the government extensive powers to do quite a lot. And that's why whenever I'm asked this question about whether the government has the power to do X, Y, Z, especially when it comes to surveillance, when it comes to blocking of information, and everybody's a little suspicious of the fact that perhaps they don't have that power. However, that's not true. the Information Technology Act, Section 69, is pretty extensive. And in this particular case, the government does have the power to block certain information. And there are rules that they have been laid out in it. And rules are mostly that there is a law, there is a big statute, and then how that law will be implemented is a matter of subordinate legislation. So the law is made by the parliamentarians. They say, okay, this is the power we are giving you. Go ahead and make it happen. And then it comes to each ministry, and each ministry then takes it up and then thinks that, okay, now how am I going to turn this law into something which we can execute? That's why the executive branch. So similarly, there are laws under Section 69A, and in which if some information which is publicly available, it can be blocked. There are reasons which are stated in that legislation as well as the rules. These are called, it will not roll off your tongue easily. It's called Information Technology Procedure and Safeguards for Blocking Access of Information by Public Rules,
Oh my gosh.
2009.
Okay, yeah, that definitely did not roll off the tongue.
But just remember that the gist of it is that if the government deems fit, and this means that there are representatives of the Ministry of Law and Justice, Home Affairs, Information and Broadcasting, and the Computer Emergency Response Team under MeitY, if they think that some information needs to be blocked, then following those rules, they can issue such orders under these rules. And they do have the power to block public access to any kind of information online. When they say information online, so it's a broad term, and that would mean that you can block websites, you can block mobile apps, and you can do what you think is the right way to do it. It also, of course, provides for review of such a thing, that whenever a block is issued, then of course the website who have been blocked, they are given an opportunity to be heard, which is what has happened here also. And then the order is reviewed, and there are reasons about it, which why it can be done. There are terms, as you rightly said, like security of the state, emergency nature, sovereignty and integrity of India, and public order, which are these common for determinations across Indian laws. And deliberately, the terms used are broad so that there is enough leeway to take action as and when the government sees fit.
So, what I gathered from this is that the government has sweeping powers to ban these apps or websites or whatever else, and it does not really have to explain itself too much to the public as to why these have been banned. Those terms that you just used, I think that, like you said, those are really broad, and if the government just has to say that, okay, for these reasons it's been banned, then I guess we just have to guess what exactly these apps did that got them banned, right?
So it's an interesting question, and to any person who thinks about this issue even for a minute, this would seem very instinctive that if you're blocking something, won't you give any reasons about it? You must be required to give some reason about it. But these rules have a very interesting provision, which is that if you are blocked and such a blocking information has been issued, then you are also supposed to have strict confidentiality about this. So there is the rules require that strict confidentiality shall be maintained regarding all the requests and complaints which are received and actions which are taken under these rules. It's a curious provision. And in Shreya Singhal versus Union of India, in which SFLC.IN participated as well as represented some other parties, this issue was brought to the court's notice. And the court curiously says that there is nothing wrong with this provision, because they say that if they do say that the order will have to be explained why something is being blocked, and then somebody can go and challenge it in the high courts under Article 226, which is when a writ is filed in high courts, and you say, okay, my rights are being curtailed here, so I'm going to file a writ petition here. And so why I say it is curious is because if the orders are supposed to be confidential, then how do you actually go and challenge them? So it seems that the right reading is that the court is saying if TikTok is banned, then TikTok receives an order from the government. That order tells you why TikTok is being banned. There is time which is given, and TikTok has a legal recourse to go to court. Now, when you talk about public, that is an interesting thing again. One of the major problems, whether it is internet shutdowns, in which India has the notoriety of having the highest number of internet shutdowns in the world so far, but or it is website censorship. One of the major issues which India has been grappling is the transparency around it. This is not to say that government may not have good reasons to shut certain things down. Whether we agree with those reasons or not agree is as a separate argument. But what we are thinking about is that because there is not enough information available, there's not enough transparency around when such bans are issued, when websites are blocked, when internet is shut down. There is always this suspicion around exactly what's going on. And it is a matter of censorship because you are taking away certain information. You are depriving the public from accessing some information. So you are exercising control about free flow of information. But you also keep everything surrounded in this cloak of secrecy and not enough transparency, which creates this tiff between what the public thinks is happening, what the government perhaps might be doing. And it always seems that the public and the government are on separate sides of a question. So that's why if there was more transparency, if everything was not confidential about it, A, we would all know what exactly is going on. And coming back to your initial question about that, we would know why something was done, what are the reasons, and these vague sounding terms, we would be able to question and understand them. But all that does not exist. And that's why we are usually not even informed when some websites are blocked. Either you're trying to access a website and suddenly it is blocked, or something else happens, or for the longest time, for after so many years of litigation, now the Supreme Court has said that, okay, you will have to put out all the orders when you order an internet shutdown, also out in the public. But otherwise, mostly our organization, which runs the only tracker in the world about India's internet shutdowns, used to rely on right to information requests, which also get tangled into years of litigation or public reporting, or somebody tells us from the ground post facto that there's an internet shutdown. So unfortunately, because there is not enough transparency, so even if there are good reasons to do something like that, from the government's point of view, one always feels that there is some suspicious thing going around here. And the public, because they don't know why something is being done. So everybody is lost and speculations emerge. And social media, which is a collective context destruction machine, they love to throw theories, and everybody is then conspiring to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, true. So, I mean, I have like multiple threads of thought going on based on what all you said. So I think I'll start with a little bit of like, you know, filling the gaps between what happened before that government's order where they banned it and what happened a little after. So one thing that's emerging here is when there's no official explanation, I think it's the human mind's natural tendency to try and fill those gaps and assume that there is some dangerous thing lurking there, which is why this ban has been issued. Now, that may be true, that may not be true. We do not know because there has been no official explanation on like what exactly it is that has led to the ban. So in that, if you remember, before these apps were banned, there was a strong anti-China sentiment in India due to the at least on social media in India, I should clarify, due to the border tensions between those two countries. Now, obviously, we don't need to get into what's been going on at the border. That's like beyond the purview of our discussion. But we had some apps such as that Remove China apps, which was an actual app on Android, which listed certain Chinese apps and said that here's an uninstall button. It will redirect you to that place and you can go and uninstall these apps from your smartphone. Google obviously like said that this is against our rules and we'll remove this, and it got removed. But we also saw like a bit of a surge in some Indian alternatives to TikTok and other Chinese apps. So before this ban happened itself, there was that wave of, I guess, jingoism happening on social media and, you know, clearly on Google Play and on Android. And we saw things like certain Chinese apps were getting negative reviews, etc. Now, after that, again, because there was no explanation, people just assumed that, okay, these apps are bad for our security and that's why they've been banned. But there's no explanation once more. And like, all I'm seeing and hearing is that because there is tension at the border, we should ban these apps, and that's the correct move. And there must be something wrong that they've done, but there's no actual answer. So I'm still struggling to figure out why these apps have been banned. And I have no answers beyond, okay, like, you know, some people are saying that, okay, they did that thing at the border, which is wrong. That's a separate issue altogether. But the app ban, how is it connected? What exactly have the apps done? That information is not, you know, available anywhere. So I'm really struggling to find an answer here, and I don't think, and I really think we need some kind of a framework where the government has to explain to the people also that, okay, this is why it's been banned. Otherwise, I mean, people, like a lot of people were still reliant on these apps for their livelihood, right? I mean, TikTok, for example, so many people were actually using it to make some money, and those people suddenly now have to build their following on other platforms. And similarly, we've seen many, many stories of people not being, like, people being negatively affected by this, and it's not a good look overall.
So what I would say is that I think we don't have to get into the merits of what's happening at the border, but it also underscores the fact that what we used to call the cyber world, the cyber politics, or whatever was happening on the internet, at least until now, it was possible to delineate and distinguish it from our offline life. And this, considering we're all sitting in this pandemic and negotiating every aspect of our life behind the screens, whether it is entertainment or our work, if we are lucky enough to be able to work from home or staying in touch with our families or banking or ordering food, etc., that has told us that despite how bad the health conditions are, but there was never a better time in the human race's history to be able to stay at home and still be able to be connected and do all of these things, which has been enabled by the internet. So until now, or for a very long time, we have been thinking about, we also debate whether offline rights apply online, whether, as they say that on the internet, everybody can be a dog. But I don't think that's any longer true in that sense, because what started in the 80s or the 90s or the early aughts for India, for example, that's not the internet we have anymore. It's a very different internet. And this thing, this particular development of ban of Chinese apps, the anti-national, the anti-Chinese sentiment and the pro-national sentiments, and how they come about to be about this ban, app ban, is just underscoring that geopolitics is so intertwined now with what happens online, with what happens on the internet, and with what happens in the cyber world, that you can no longer extricate them and think of them as two parallel threads going on in the world. The impact of one thing is bound to have an impact on the other. You look at the large businesses in the world, the market cap of companies which are operating in the digital sphere primarily, but also spilling out in our offline lives, keeps increasing at something which was earlier found to be really mind-boggling and very difficult to understand. You see what whether it was General Motors or it's Ford or the Tatas or everybody else, and then you see the Googles and the Amazons and the Apple or the Facebooks of the world and where they are growing. So So that's why, because the importance of the online life is increasing every minute as we talk, and we will also now can't ignore the fact that whatever geopolitical developments are going to happen, whether it is in trade, whether it is about the border issues, whether it is about diplomatic issues, they are not going to be intertwined with how people respond using some other means. This is to say, I'm not saying that whether the government of India is justified or not, but from their perspective, in the short term, this might have been a place to send a message, to make their presence felt, saying, you cannot attack us on the border and think that your businesses will be able to operate without any explanation or without any kind of check from our regulators' end. And there is no question that these two developments are interlinked. Although the Meitei order talks about we are worried about national security, we are worried about the data which is being leaked, and several people for a very long time have complained about the privacy of these apps, etc. So it lists various things, it jumbles them together, and then it says we are deciding to do it. But the precipitating event, even if we were to believe that all these complaints had been coming for a long time, but the precipitating event is definitely what happened at the border. Now, that tells us another thing is that that the value of the global internet is being destroyed by geopolitical forces. Because as China, India, and now even the US prohibit the distribution of computer programs, these are computer programs, you can call them smartphone apps, in the ostensible interest of securing their citizens' data against privacy invading exploitation and for broad national security reasons. Because there is going to be international confrontation, and these usually are not amenable to technical or legal solution. But now we are seeing that to say, oh, we will fracture the net in such a way, this is our way to respond to what is happening in terms of our border disputes or trade disputes in the case of US, etc. So when you ask your question, the first part is that, because there are again various layers of it. First part is you can't distinguish what happens in our offline world, not to have to from what happens in our online world. You cannot separate them any longer. Second part is privacy and data protection are actual issues, but every government is going to react in a very different way. In our case in India, if Government of India is so concerned about the data leakages, the privacy of its citizens, it shouldn't be sitting for so long on a data protection bill. It shouldn't be sitting on a draft of a data protection bill, which gives complete powers to the Government of India and its agencies to do whatever they feel like. It should not be forcing all its citizens to download something called Arogya Setu, which doesn't even work, and then use whatever is the remnant data of it to build something called a national health stack. It should be putting a stop to the data leakages, which are happening every day from the various places where Aadhaar is being used, or what the Indian apps are doing. I think the Government of India is right about the fact that privacy is important, data protection is important, but at the heart of all of this is people protection, which is you and me want to use any kind of app. I don't care whether it is Instagram by Facebook, or it is TikTok, or it is ShareChat, or anything. You and me as users want to use all the apps which make our life easier and more entertaining, or give us whatever we want to do in our lives. But we don't want to be worrying about reading long terms and conditions. We don't want to worry about whether our financial data is being hacked by somebody. We want that apps should work. We should be protected. If ever there is a problem, I should be able to report that problem and it is resolved within 3 to 5 days at the most. That is what we want. And if the government of India is serious about it, then they need to subject everybody to rule of law. So, like the Meitei order says, oh, we are concerned about privacy, data leakages, etc. If we had a data protection law, if we had a way, a framework which was ensuring that data is protected, people are protected, then Meitei wouldn't have to rely on the 69A of the blocking orders. Then what they would have done is that a very simple thing is that they would have relied on that particular law. And it would be easy for the public to understand that our data is being leaked and the government is coming to our protection. And then there are not all these vague phrases. Having said that, we don't have such a law, so there is nothing to rely on. They have to go to Information Technology Act. Also, the fact that they think this is a short-term measure. This is not going to work in the long term. There is definitely an anti-China sentiment in the world, not just in India.
Yes.
Because it is clear that the Chinese have decided that their way of being in India, being in the world, is going to be this aggressive mode. And they are not going to respect any human rights of their own citizens. And they are going to be putting out policies in which they will dictate how businesses operate in their territory. And it's a very big market, it's an attractive market, but it is a closed market. They have gotten advantages of the World Trade System. A lot of manufacturing of the entire world is dependent on China. But the Western world had the idea that they will be able to transform China in 30 years to its values, but it has not happened. In fact, it's the other way around. China is now forcing its values on the world based on its economic power. So it's a big challenge, and that's why we are seeing these scattered responses from various powers in the world.
Yeah, I mean I'm so glad you explained that so nicely. It's such a complicated issue, and it's without getting into jingoism and my country better than your country type of a discussion, it is very hard to have any explanation on this issue on that. So the one thing that you said that I completely agree with is that this is more than just about data security. It's more about a geopolitical issue that's spilling over into our day-to-day lives right now. And I personally don't feel that banning these 59 apps alone is going to make us more secure on the internet or something. I think after that, there were some rumors about 47 more apps being banned, and some other journalist had basically done a story saying that 250 even more apps are going to be banned by the government. So far, that's not happened, but one of those apps was PUBG Mobile. Now, that's a game that a lot of people think that, okay, it's a silly addiction for a few people, but a lot of people depend on that game for income. A lot of people depend on that game for socializing. I know people who have their entire friend circle inside that one game because the voice chat feature and just overall, bonding over there in the game happens a lot. So, when that, rumor or basically the journalist said put out that report saying that PUBG Mobile is going to be banned, again we saw the same fear mongering that was there before. TikTok was banned before that. A lot of people were saying no, Chinese apps are all not secure and they should be banned. And that whole cycle started repeating again. So like you said, now if the government does not have to explain itself, and if they are not coming to you and saying that, look, this is for your protection, this is for basically you as a person, your data should not be exported to other countries or whatever it is, then there is some kind of an understanding there. But right now, it's just coming from that country bad, so it may be banned, and there you go. That's it. There's no other explanation beyond that. So, in general, how do you think the government can be a little more transparent about communicating about these bans, at least? I'm really struggling to come up with answers with the way the government works right now, but it'll be great if you can show an alternative reality where the government is talking to its people and how that would help.
Sorry. So I think let me just put everything in perspective. So the first iPhone is actually launched only in 2007. It seems forever. We're in 2020, Our world has changed so much that we have assumed that we understand what's going on in our world. I will also say that facts are being created on the ground at a breakneck speed that barely anybody can keep up. One of the most exciting things about being a lawyer in this field is that, unlike many of my other counterparts who are perhaps in a traditional form of law where nothing changes forever, our Indian Penal Code was written in 1816. So we're not, where of course facts happen, where cases are different, but law is not changing. To me, I have to read the newspaper every day to think, oh my God, now what? So tech is always 2 steps ahead of where the government is, and the laws are 2 steps behind. Because laws take forever to change. And government also is trying to keep up with what's happening. And the tech at that level is moving so fast that they think any kind of conversation with the government means that they're trying to stifle innovation. That's everybody's favorite word. So what happens here is that the government is also always on a defensive foot. They're trying to always defend whatever they are doing. And then I think that because we don't have a mechanism of a lot of stakeholders weighing in, so they don't really hear from what a youngster is thinking, what a PUBG player is thinking. See the average age of our ministers. I have sat in these meetings and they are really very smart people, but they're not native to all of this. Now, for the longest time, we've always suffered from the fact that India has had this cases take forever, etc. It was fine when it was something else. Actually, it wasn't acceptable because we are talking about heinous crimes like rape, like murder, etc. But even in that sense, we were able to accept it. But in tech, everything moves much faster. And things are changing so fast that if you don't take a decision tomorrow, things are irrelevant or something else has happened. So I would say that the thing that the government has to understand is that they won't be able to catch up so with tech as much. Also, the companies have to understand is that there are some responsibilities they will have to fulfill. They cannot claim innovation and just steamroll over people's rights. That's what happened with Aadhaar. It starts as a great project with a great vision, but they start with holding public hearings. But society is hard. Tech is easy. It is much easier to write a computer program, no matter what is your favorite language. Just don't. I mean, I will only judge people who like JavaScript. But anyway, but tech is easy. Society is hard. So companies have to understand that rights matter. Societies matter. The impact of tech on democracy, on privacy, on how we express ourselves matter. And the government has to understand that a light-handed regulation and clear rules and transparency is what will get them further, rather than trying to control everything. I will say one thing, that this entire thing about nationalism, I think that's only a red herring. It's a convenient argument for Indian companies who have actually missed the bus on product to take that argument, claim all that nonsense, and just say that, Indian apps are better than the foreign apps, or Indian companies are better than foreign companies. Reliance Jio is going to be better than everything, or an Indian chat app is going to be better than everything. So it's not. There is a reason about the fact that we should understand that public should not be buying products just because it is Swadeshi. I know that it is an unpopular opinion right now. I personally have worked on things where I would like India to be making a lot of stuff, to come up with products, because there is no other population which is as talented as the Indian population in the tech world. But that does not mean that somehow because it is Indian, we should accept an inferior product.
Yeah.
It's a good product. Everybody will buy it. Look at Instagram Reel. It's a dud. It's coming out of a great company in the sense of product development. That's another reason they just love to rip off everybody else's features and their competitors.
Yeah.
But it's a dud compared to TikTok.
Yeah.
So why would people use it? So if Indian companies want to be truly global and really want to think that they are going to be successful at the same rate as some of these American platforms or now the Chinese have been, then we also have to operate in the global market. You can't just think, right, that I'm going to use the government to protect myself in this in the country in India. I will make enough money here, but please, with law and with regulation, help me not compete. Give me a leg up because I missed the bus. Now I need a leg up. Just because something is Indian doesn't mean the customer is going to buy it. If it works for them, they will buy it. If you are producing something in the vernacular, if you are going to go to the customer where the customer is, if you're going to give them what they want, whether it is in terms of language or music or the ease of usability or user interface and protecting that data, the customer will come to you. And there is enough to create pro privacy respecting or IT for humanity in that sense. And Indians can do that. I think this entire thing of companies, A, not being able to make up their mind whether they want government involvement or they don't want government involvement. Because when the government gets involved, they say, oh my God, light-handed regulation, otherwise you are stifling innovation. But then that also comes with the fact that they can't have it both ways. They can't say that the government should protect us from outsiders, like the Chinese protected their own market from outsiders. And so they can't say it both, they can't have it both ways. Because if the government gets involved, they will get involved on both ends. So they have to decide, what do they want? And otherwise, the government should, personally, I think they should understand that there needs to be a privacy framework. They need to understand it has to be quick. Government also should not try to be messing up things in this public-private partnership where they get very fascinated when some tech startup comes up and shows them great PowerPoint slides about what they will make. And that's why the botched up job with Arogya Setu. So some techie comes and they say, oh yeah, we are going to do this a great job. There are press conferences, there's everything. And the government thinks, oh, we don't have capability. The government should invest in getting more talented, younger developers and engineers in-house. The government should educate its own people about these matters, not outsource it to somebody who's going to take them also for a ride. The third thing is that they need to have clear, simple laws. Rule of law requires that we, as the citizens, need to understand what the law is. Most of the times, we don't even know our basic rights. That's why the police guy can actually harass you on the street if you are sitting with somebody of an opposite gender and just having a conversation in your car. And they come and harass you by saying, oh my God, you're violating some rule. It's some moral policing they're trying to do. There's no rule you are violating. But because we don't know our rights, we don't even feel empowered to argue with the police guy. So that's why government has to make simple, transparent, easy laws. Whenever it takes an action, it should give a justification and say, okay, this is what has happened. We are concerned about it. Here is our order doing it. If you have an objection, this is the way you can raise your objection. We will listen to you. And this is a public consultation we are doing. Government should not make an assumption that just because they are government and they are older than most of the people who are netizens, they are right about it. They should put out a decision, but they should also be ready to take in some inputs about it. But having said that, running a country is a much more complicated job than running either a tech company or for you and me to just weigh in from outside, or somebody who's now objecting to the fact that, oh my God, my PUBG will be banned or my TikTok followers have been banned. But if there was clarity, if we were already transparent about many things, you and I would not be discussing this at all.
Yeah, true that. Yeah, I mean, it's such a complicated issue though. It's not something that you can reduce to just certain those scary words, and it's not something that you can just say that no, it's not important. Like you very rightly said, especially about PUBG, etc. People say it's a silly game, it's not important, even if it gets banned, so what, you can play other games and all that. But that's not the point, right? The whole argument around this issue has just like completely glossed over all the problems that we have here and is focusing on some, it's like a very, I don't know, there's a tendency to just like reduce it to very simplistic us versus them type of arguments on the internet. And it just completely glosses over all these other problems that we have. So it's been really nice to have that perspective from you on these issues. And I honestly, genuinely, I feel that I don't think anyone else could have come and explained it so clearly over here. So I'm really happy that you were able to do that. So in my opinion, I think we have covered this topic in a fairly detailed way, and I think we have hit almost all the right notes here. But is there anything else that you would like to add before we close this episode?
No, you're very generous in how you're treating my comments and your patience about it. All I would say is, as you rightly said, that I think that this is becoming part of everybody's life. There is nobody who's left untouched. So I think that at least in our country, what we need is a CTO's office, which is above and beyond party lines, whose that office has experts and who decide on policies, because these policies also run across fields. Because what policy you'll make today about tech will also leak into how the financial health of the world, of the entire infrastructure in the country works, or what policies you will make, they will also determine how health is handled in our country. So, and you can't keep changing it as and when the government comes up. So, a CTO's office, which is an office of experts, which tells you that it's all right, today BJP is in power, tomorrow some other party is in power, day after someone else is in power, it doesn't matter. This is what India's vision about its tech policy is. These are the laws that we need. These are the frameworks we need, which are not perhaps laws. And this is what we have decided to make our ecosystem, which is going to be innovative, which is going to be also people respecting.
Yeah, I mean it's like a system overall, right? It's not something that's like you said, it takes law so much time to change. So these are like systems that are built in, which will take a lot of time to get in any of these directions that we've discussed. But you can't be completely pessimistic, and you can't say that no, it's not going to happen. And the biggest thing here is that you have to have that vision that okay, something needs to be done, and there is an alternative here which can be tried. So whether it gets done or not is a different thing, but when the discussion has been like lowered to that level where it's like me versus them or whatever, like jingoism that goes on, then there's no room for these things like okay, what can we do to handle this better, how can we be more transparent in this, all these things just get completely lost in that. Now if your point of view, if we present it to some people who are shouting online right now, I'm pretty sure they would be able to say that okay, fine, huh, this is something that we should consider. We should maybe look at this because this is for the betterment of people. Ultimately, that's what the government is all about. But the way things are happening on these places, it's all about what can generate the most possible clicks, what can generate the most possible debate, and what can get people angry. And then in that, all progressive discussion and all nuance is lost. And if you see that kind of a place, and if you're thinking of making a policy based on what is being said over there in on these social media sites, then, like you rightly pointed out, it's not looking great, is it, over there? So I don't know what the solution is here, but it definitely is very good to hear that there is an alternative viewpoint that is possible, and I hope that more people pick up these kinds of discussions and take them forward in real life, if not online, because like you said, nobody is gonna get much attention if they're all Jack Dorsey. So, yeah, I think with that, maybe we can close this episode. It's actually been a very nice and in-depth discussion. And we'll be back with one more episode of Orbital next week. In the meantime, what I'll be doing is I'll be trying to get you on board on more such episodes in the future, because I don't want this to be the first and only episode that we do where we talk about issues such as privacy and the legality of things that are going on in the country. So, you know, it would be very nice to have you once again sometime. I don't know, how did you enjoy this podcast, or am I the only one who's very happy with what you're doing today?
No, I was waiting for you to wind up, considering when these interviews happen, sometimes one has a tendency to really talk, and I knew that I was hogging 70% of the airtime. So I didn't want to keep speaking,
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but the point of this podcast is something I've not been able to achieve much. But the whole point of this podcast when I started it was that I shut up and other people talk. So this is not here for me to come here and, you know, like just make this about me. This is about all the people who are on the podcast. And I'm really glad that you were able to, do that over here.
No, I'm very happy that you invited, and I enjoy conversations. And you were very patient about it and asking the right questions. It's just that there are just so many threads of everything that sometimes one starts with one thread and then you've already lost track of what you were getting at. So I apologize if that happened, but I enjoyed this immensely. Thank you for doing it. I would love to have more such discussions, or have other people weigh in. There's just so much great stuff happening. Somebody once said to me that India and US are watching the same reality TV show in terms of tech and politics. India is just two seasons ahead. So India is like this petri dish where everything is happening at such rapid pace. Mm. So to hear from what women are thinking, what the LGBTQI community is thinking in terms of technology, to hear from innovators, to hear from yourself as journalists, what you think, and various other people who are involved from the government's perspective. Mm. It's very educational, and it also helps one understand how complicated these issues are. And that's why I keep saying that it's not going to end. Piecemeal solutions will not work. So some office in the government which dedicates itself fully to such a thing will really help across party lines. And so thank you for doing this. Thank you for inviting other people. And I will add you to the list, and I will keep listening, and hopefully we'll chat up about other things.
Yeah, later. I will let you know whenever we have a non, you know, which phone to buy type of an episode, so that you can not get bored. But yeah, the goal is to do more of those, and more of these kinds of episodes, and less of the, you know, which phone to buy eventually. So let's see how that pans out. We'll find out in 2 months.
Whatever pays the bill.
Yeah.
I as a lawyer also do a lot of stuff which is not very interesting, but it pays the bill.
Yeah, true that. Fair enough. All right. So let's conclude this episode all right. Over here.
Take care.
Yes. Thank you so much. And just a quick request to all our listeners, subscribe to this podcast, rate it, review it on whichever podcast app that you use. I'll be happy with any ratings that you can give. I know that some of you have complained that we can't exactly review it in Google Podcasts. Please just subscribe. That's fine. You don't have to do all of these things. And for more things tech, you can always follow Gadgets360 on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. We have the same handle everywhere. Just search for Gadgets360 and you will find us. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with hopefully some more interesting content. And at the same time, if you have any questions, comments, and feedback, be sure to write to us at podcast@gadgets360.com. Thanks again.